Hey there, thanks for pressing play on this AHDB podcast. So, bit of news. Food and Farming and Agonomics have officially been retired. No more episodes coming. But wait, before you wander off into the podcast wilderness, we've got something new, shiny and weekly. It's called The Ag Show. It's got all the good stuff. Farming chats, fresh insights and a whole load of fun. New episodes drop every Wednesday at midday. Just search The Ag Show wherever you get your podcasts to give it a whirl.
Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hello and welcome to the second episode in our Monitor Farm series. I'm Katrina Thompson, one of the regional managers in our beef and lamb team. And in this series, we'll be visiting three of our monitor farms to hear directly from them about what projects they've worked on as part of the programme, what improvements they've made, how it's all shaped their business performances, and what others can learn from them. Last time, we heard about the soil health and grassland management approach adopted by Rob and Liz Priest down on the Devon-Cornwall border. In this episode, we head to Glover's Farm in North Norfolk. Tenant farmer David Cross farms around 550 hectares, combining arable crops with his sheep and cattle enterprises. He's working to improve soil health and business resilience using herbal lays, mob grazing, and reduced inputs to build a more sustainable system. David began by telling me why he got involved in the Monitor Farm project.
The finances were fairly obvious without running the numbers, but I had managed to identify where it was that things weren't making a huge amount of money, and some fag packet maths on where I thought we could make things better. Well, that's sort of quite a daunting task, I guess. So it seemed like the whole Monitor Farm process, sort of tapping into a lot of farmers' knowledge and part of the process, getting consultants in and your steering group, sort of just to give some direction, really, and then some sort of higher level advice how to actually get it done, filling in some gaps of where I might be in lacking.
Yeah, so getting a bit of that knowledge sharing, the sort of peer-to-peer as well as the expert as well, I guess is quite a big draw of that, isn't it? What were your main goals and projects when you'd started the programme?
So we'd sort of come to the conclusion that we were going to introduce a lot more animals into what was an arable rotation. And knowing all of our shortfalls, as in low organic matter, low rainfall, high pH, sort of tired arable soils, that drought was going to be a problem. So we were looking at what species to drill and how to drill them and when to drill them. What covers we needed to, you know, residuals we needed to graze down to, and what covers we needed to go into. And that was that original ADAS assisted species assessment stuff. And then sort of alongside that, it was a lot of the financials. So there was a lot of comparing different enterprises, realizing we needed a lot of mounds once we were converting the arable area into grass. So coming up with something that would fit. So it was contract rearing, dairy cross Angus calves, or whether we were going to buy stores, or whether we were going to do a suckler system. We could kind of see where we were going, but we just needed some direction. So it was just projects around getting us a bit of direction, I guess. It's sort of identifying the fundamental problems, which was the reason why we were going into arable, which was to try, sorry, the reason why we were going into having more animals, was to try and get our soils into a better position to have more options.
I'm not sure everyone's first thought when they think I need to improve my soil biology would be, let's get some animals involved. So it's an innovative approach to have taken.
It feels like it's relatively proven that we need perennial plants and lots of cows and move them as often as your time and labour can allow, and the rest does it for you. But I guess in our context that we're slightly restricted with not having £500,000 to go out and buy suckler cows that would do the A1 job. So it was finding something that it's not going to take a whole load of equity and still make money.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is do you think that you've succeeded in the goal of the Monitor Farm programme?
I think the Monitor Farm programme in itself has been a great success. I don't think you ever get to some place where you could, like, you're clicked. Just going to go tick, yeah, we've got it, because every single thing you do just flags up another question that you've got to try and answer. And we're a long way away from being a finished article or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, we've achieved a lot in a short period of time. It feels like probably about halfway through of getting to where we, like, the end goal, but I think that probably just will keep creeping away from us.
Yeah, keep evolving. What were some of the biggest challenges that you faced during the programme?
I guess it's probably just physical workload. you know, just when we started, it's essentially just me, because Dad works off farm most of the time. Mm-hmm. So when we started the monofarm process, we had a one-year-old, and now we've finished, we've got three under five.
Oh, my goodness.
So coincided with probably a busy enough period in our life without having, like, extra stuff to do, but it's good. And all the rest of it does, it wasn't difficult when we started. We were like, right, we're going to move everything out, you know, every single day. And it's probably like year two, we were like, okay, we'll move everything every other day. And
yeah,
but we might do that every two and a third. And now we just move them every 3 or 4 days, you know. And I think the outcome is relatively, but we've increased in scale. So yeah, I'm slightly rambling, but yeah, it's
No, it's interesting. It's the ultimate balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
What did I say? Good enough is good enough. So it's got to work for you and your life as well.
Yeah, yeah. We might do full circle, you know, once we're not still pushing, trying to get all the fencing and infrastructure up. And once that's done, it might be that, okay, look, cash flow is not quite such a big thing now. So we're making an employee a person and do, you know, a super tidy job again.
So what were some of the projects that you did as part of the Monitor Farm programme?
We looked at like labour efficiency and infrastructure and the cost effectiveness of infrastructure. And James came up with like a alleyway type system on a fixed area basis. So we took a 100-acre field and broke it up into 8 5-hectare alleyways, which then you could subdivide with a single wire, which were great. So that was with no government funding, no countryside stewardship, capital work stuff. So we've since sort of moved on to a fixed width alleyway. So essentially our alleyways, kind of like a controlled traffic type system. We work the widths in to correspond with a sprayer. So when we go back to growing crops, it's we don't have to take our infrastructure up. For example, the width of the alleyways taken off the straightest hedge would be, say, 90 or 120 or 50 metres wide. And then we have a metre buffer wherever they touch a fence. And then the ends stop 1 metre short of where there would be a headland. So then you've still got, you know, an easy field to work. You haven't got loads of individual alleyways. You've got a headland, which is, as it would be, contiguous in a normal field sense. And then your alleyways, which will force us to farm those fields in that fixed structure. But we've tried to do it the best way from a runoff perspective or a topography type thing or soil type or whatever. So there's a bit of thinking gone into it. And then down those alleyways, there's like hydrants for water, so you can just plug in. So that we originally started with James's techno-grazing fences, which are like a fiberglass flexi fence with high tensile on. And with the capital works, we had to sort of compromise and we've gone with a Clipex fence. But what it does do is it gives you fixed widths between posts as well. So it's much easier for people to, if I'm somebody's coming to do it for us, like Gethin coming when he first came, you could say, you know, I've done the maths, those cattle need 2 hectares every day. He can very quickly go, oh yeah, it's 90 meters wide. I only need to count whatever it would be, 12 posts up the field, and he's got a hectare. Whereas before, when it was the whole alleyway was a fixed area and the widths would vary, it was quite difficult for somebody to allocate each day's grass.
Oh, I see. Because I was going to ask how it helped with your labour efficiency.
So it helps efficiency from a working perspective, like with tractors, cultivator, sprayer stuff. Not that we're getting much of that benefit at the moment. But mainly it's making it easier for somebody else to allocate grazing. And then, you know, it takes a little bit getting your head around, you know, like understanding what cover is there and then what residual and then so that you're available and the demand from the animals. But if we can make as many elements of that as easy as possible, it's easier for somebody to get their head around.
Were there any unexpected lessons or surprises along the way? 2 extra children.
Yeah, 2 extra children. The third definitely being a surprise. I don't think so, other than realizing at the beginning quite how much we had to, you know, how far we had to go. There's been stuff that's been unexpected and tricky challenges, probably mostly from the government and, you know, closing SFIs and or everything else everybody knows about. but not directly linked to the Monitor Farm program, no. We know our numbers are a lot more better and our management is of grass is a lot better, could be a lot better again. But yeah, they would be probably the most significant changes is knowing our numbers, so then being able to be a bit more aware of what's the right enterprise for us and what drives that thing to make money. Well, a year and a half into chickens, laying hens. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we've got a couple of sheds that you can tow around. Theory is they sort of move around behind the cows, but we've got too many cows to try and keep up with. The theory was at the beginning, they sort of break a bit of their parasite link and, you know, worms and biting flies and stuff. In reality, the chickens have a nice time, but I don't think they're making much difference to like parasite control. But yeah, so then we collect the eggs obviously daily and then twice a week do a egg delivery round, delivering to restaurants and cafes and need more eggs.
So expanding even further.
Yeah, and it's been quite fun, like selling something to people rather than just, I don't know, lambs on a deadweight contract or whatever. So that's been quite nice, and designing the labels and all that sort of thing.
Whole new skill set to have picked up.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't really claim to have learned any of the skills probably myself, but we've got
not there like, on Photoshop.
It's talking to people that can do it. It's just like, yeah, it's fun.
Other than your newfound, of course, Photoshop skills for designing labels for your eggs, have you developed any other new skills as part of the programmes, and how has it impacted your confidence?
I don't know whether you call it public speaking, but like just general engagement with other people, which I don't know whether I've got better at or not, really. I'm probably more comfortable with it.
Yeah, definitely. And we had, didn't we, the final Monitor Farm event at your farm in May. And you were speaking there, so that was great for people to hear from you. And I think you said you were recently speaking to Welsh TV as well. Could be the face.
Yeah, S4C were doing, that was more on, so my wife, Mary, she is first language Welsh, and we employ a guy on the farm, Gethin, who is first language Welsh. I'm not going to try and pronounce the name of the program because I get it wrong. But they like go around looking at different people. It was mainly people based, but like different businesses and stuff, usually countryside orientated, obviously, who are Welsh speaking. And yeah, they came to talk to Mary about the egg business because she basically has got all that off the ground, really.
And you've mentioned it was nice to speak to other farmers about like, the work you're doing and hear a bit about what they're doing. So how important was, I guess, that peer support and knowledge throughout the programme? Because you mentioned at the beginning it was something you were looking for, was that engagement with other farmers and learning from them. Do you feel that you have been able to learn from other farmers?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, you don't need the Monitor Farm programme to learn from other people, but to learn from people, you've got to do some engagement and stuff. And when we have the on-farm meetings, you always get loads from that.
Yeah, so as part of the Monitor Farm programme, there was the on-farm meetings and steering group as well. So what exactly did the steering groups entail?
The steering group was busy at the beginning, and then we probably could have done a bit more with keeping the steering group going, but it did a bit of steering at the beginning, and then we kind of took off from there. Yeah, it was made up of various different people who, as good a spread of people with a lot of knowledge that we could think of. So we had Simon Weirmouth, who's a Brown & Co. land agent. We had our agronomist, Andrew McShane. We had the farm manager at Holcombe, John Smith, Liz Jennifer.
Yeah, that was there at the beginning as sort of shaping and steering, as you say, and then almost like graduated from that and didn't need it as much, it sounds like. Yeah. And then as you say, you had the discussion groups. I think there was a recent one on parasites, wasn't there? So it's just, again, that knowledge exchange in the sort of literal sense, isn't it, between farmers?
Yeah.
If you could go back to the start of the Monitor Farm programme, is there anything that you think you would do differently?
No, I don't think so. No, it's been good. I think we've covered a lot of stuff, and I'm not sure we could have done much more. I don't know, the budget would have allowed me to do too much more. I probably did quite a good job of spending that. I have no complaints or regrets or whatever. So I think it's been good.
I suppose on a similar vein, if you were speaking to another farmer who was considering joining the Monitor Farm programme, is there any advice that you would give them at the start?
I mean, there's nothing really to lose from the process just by even being thinking about doing it. You've obviously got a personality that wants to, like, you know, improve your business or your farm. So you're halfway there and then in. And if you are that sort of person, it's perfect, isn't it? Because you're going to, you just have to engage with the process and have chinks of ideas and just get into it.
Yeah, there's something in there, I guess, about being a bit creative, and it's the embracing new ideas. And I guess to go back to what you'd said at the beginning, it's the, if you're scared by the idea of change, maybe it's not for you. But going into this and being prepared to embrace change, I think it's probably a good point.
Change usually comes from like necessity for change in our like context. Mm. We had to change and change quite quickly from a financial perspective. So I guess once that's half the battle, isn't it? Because if you don't think from the beginning that you've got to find something a bit different, you're probably not going to be part of the process anyway.
And then now that the programme has ended, what is next for you and your business?
First on the list is we've got to complete all our like capital works, our countryside stewardship capital works scheme. So we've got, what, nearly 18 months to finish that, which is nearly 40K of fencing, as in 40 kilometres of fencing, 20 kilometres of water pipe, load of subdivision, like avenues of trees in the fields and stuff. So that's going to keep us fairly busy. Alongside that, we're probably looking at pushing cattle numbers up a bit on some of our outlying blocks of grass, expanding the fodder beet grazing a bit. Now we've started these things, it's just finding out where the sweet spot is going to be, with whether it's scale or labour. And as we get bigger and, you know, we've got Geth in and we've got an apprentice starting, and then we'll probably employ another person this next winter, is getting a bit more, I don't know whether professional is the word or whatever, but a bit more structure around like employing people and them hitting, sort of a bit buzzwordy, isn't it, but the sort of goals that they want to, like if somebody wants to step up and take on more responsibility, there's something there for them to wait for them to be able to do it. Or if there's something a bit different that they want to do, I also need to have the time to be able to have the brain space to make changes to the business if they need make, you know, and not just, you know, being busy doing stuff.
Yeah, it's getting like job satisfaction for your staff, isn't it? And then if you've, as you've said, if you've got like progression opportunities for them, you kind of want to like recruit the right people, but then you also want to retain people, don't you? And if they've got a progression path, hopefully they'll stick around for longer.
There's a lot of opportunities from the grazing perspective over in the East that they want to take something on themselves, but want to do it alongside us or something like that. It's creating the opportunities.
Yeah, as you say, it's the sort of kernel of an idea, isn't it? That someone could take ownership over something and then feel like they could take that forward. But as you pointed out, it requires having the headspace to think about working on the business rather than in the business, all those buzzwords. So not just having to run around doing tasks, but think, right, I need to take out whatever it might be, half a day a week to think about, right, what's the future of this? What do I want to do with my staff?
Structured staff meetings, I think, is a good thing. And like getting their ideas as to what is going to make their life easier. And it might be just as simple as like buying some 200 quid gadget that they need. You know, it's just having the structure for them to be able to say that they need it and that I'm not zooming past in a truck to go do something else.
Thank you to David for walking us through the changes and challenges at Glover's Farm. It's great to hear about that forward-thinking mindset and data-driven decision-making. Next time, in our final episode of this Monitor Farm series, we'll be heading north to meet Harry Sordi at Annam Farm in Northumberland. In the meantime, if you'd like to read more about our Monitor Farmers or find additional resources, please visit our AHDB Farm Excellence pages.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.